Hey, it's the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. Dan, are you keeping warm?
We made it through Toronto's snowpocalypse today.
Toronto's snowpocalypse. That you just said to the rest of the country, we were wussy yesterday.
Dear listeners, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking about that time they brought in the army, and I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it. We're tired of that.
Yeah.
But you rode home yesterday,
I rode home. Yeah. It was not pleasant, even with studded tires.
The studded tires? What's your take on the studded tires?
They're the best things ever in the winter.
Here's my thing, though.
Oh, God.
I'm thinking they are not the lifesavers you're expecting them to be. And the weight and the rolling resistance on the road outweighs these safety gains.
That's
on the snow.
Absolute rubbish. Well, it's not absolute rubbish. You're right. You can still slide out on studded tires.
It's not like really putting chains on your truck tires, is it?
It's not like that. But the traction gains are immense, and it makes riding super fun.
So you'd say they're hashtag gains?
Hashtag gains.
Okay, moving on.
We got a great show. I speak to people who need wicked traction. There are four riders who will be riding through Northern Ontario. They will be starting in Attawapiskat and then going along the bottom of James Bay.
I'm not 100% sure where that is, but that sounds up there.
It's way up there. And they're actually going to Nunavut from Ontario. It can be done. You'll find out how.
It's not that far, though, in some parts, is it?
It's really not that far. It's about 20 kilometers away in some parts. But that's not to take away from this.
No, it's cold and it's hard and they're doing good stuff.
Dan is actually into it. That may have sounded dismissive, but
right.
He's actually really keen on it.
That was my genuine voice.
That was genuine. I spoke with former pro Ted King, who's on this ride, and Buck Miller, who is the driving force behind this, and they are joined by two others, and we'll find out about that.
A guy named Buck sounds like the kind of guy you want on this adventure.
And then what else do we have lined up?
We have got the Rally UHC camp interviews by Molly Herford. It is the two Canadian Sarahs who are, I'm going to go say, stars of the team.
Yeah, they got some legit palmares. We'll be talking to Sarah Bergen, or Molly will be talking to Sarah Bergen and Sarah Poitavin. And what else?
We have Coach Peter Glassford.
Yes, I pepper him with questions about what kind of training I should be doing at this time of year. And not just me, but all of us amateur riders.
Is that
why
you were trying to do pull-ups yesterday?
That actually didn't come out of that discussion. We should be doing strength training. And so I embarrassed myself at the office by doing pull-ups.
Arm day.
At the stairwell at arm day. Those numbers are top secret. And oh, and how could I forget? We have full send, no send.
And guess what?
What?
We try not go OT this time.
We try. Yes, we've had a bad track record recently of keeping within the time limit. Do we even keep it in the time limit? Stay tuned. Let's hear. In a few days, four riders are leaving from Attawapiskat First Nation in Northern Ontario for Nunavut. They'll aim their fat bikes into James Bay and head to Agamiski Island. It's about 20 kilometers from the mainland, but it is part of the Canadian territory that also includes the country's northernmost point. Yes, it's just 20 kilometers away from the province with the nation's southernmost point. That's Canadian geography for you. From Agamiski, the four will head south. They'll have a stop in Moosonee and Moose Factory. The ultimate destination is Smooth Rock Falls, Ontario, roughly 600 kilometers south of their starting point. The trip is called the James Bay Descent. Recently, I spoke with former pro cyclist Ted King, who retired from Team Cannondale Garmin after the 2015 season. He's one of the four riders and the only American on the team. The rest are Canucks. He spoke about his preparation for the trip and some of his concerns, which include polar bears. I then spoke with expedition organizer Buck Miller. He's a former member of the Canadian national team. He also lived on James Bay for 5 years. He spoke in detail about the challenges the quartet will face and the charitable component of their ride. But first, Ted King. Ted King, where did you sleep on the night of January 14th?
Oh, man. If I were a guessing man, based on recent memory, and I can't think exactly where I am, but the fact that you asked me this makes me think I was probably on the top of Whiteface Mountain in the Adirondacks, about, I think 4,400 feet above sea level.
And how was that?
It was brisk. It gave me a great respect for the creature comforts of home, for heat, for a shower, for a bed, for a roof over my head. But it was a pretty great introduction to something really cool we've got in store.
Okay, so why were you sleeping outside? And I gather were you in a tent? Were you in a bivy bag or something like that?
Yeah, so we made a slow ascent of Whiteface, which is I think the fastest dudes have done it in about 50 minutes, and we did it in about an hour 40 because we're riding big old fat bikes up an access road that's thankfully closed to traffic, and we're carrying one heck of a lot of stuff on our bikes. So get to the top. It's fairly exposed. We nestled up next to I don't even know what to call it. There are a couple buildings at the top. We did sleep outside. Two of the guys dug a snow cave of sorts, and then we were in sort of a closet of sorts with you know, exposure to the elements. Like, I slept on snow. But it gave us a good bit of a protection from wind and the total elements because, oh man, it was wild. We went to bed, absolutely stunning sunset. Sun's down, nothing else to do. Go to bed about 7:30, and we wake up the next day and we're socked in. Wind is not howling, but it's ripping pretty good. And then there's like an ice fairing on the entire, every inch, every square inch of the bikes. Yeah, we're practicing for the James Bay descent, and given that we were convening there in Keene, New York, in the Adirondacks, it made for a really good way to get some high elevation exposure.
This Adirondack trip was in preparation for the James Bay descent. What can you tell me about that ride?
We are going to start, and I'm going to probably do a very poor job pronouncing these town names. We're going to start in Attawapiskat, I think that's right, mm-hmm. And then make our way east to Akimiski Island, and then, you know, make our way slightly back onto, well, not slightly, we're going to be making our way back onto the mainland, riding ice roads initially, I mean, sort of not too much bushwhacking, and then we're on snow roads descending southeast down to Moosonee. And then continuing on snow roads down to Smooth Rock Falls. So all said and done, it's going to be about 600 kilometers. And, you know, we might anticipate, when we're moving good, we'll probably do the ability to do 100K a day. But then, you know, the first bit is quite a bit of slow moving fat bike riding. I think we're expecting temperatures as low as about negative 40. I think we're expecting one heck of a lot of wind exposure. We are trying to be over-prepared for any possibility. But yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, I like the creature comforts. So it's great having this crew who's very aware of the outdoors and respecting the outdoors. And yeah, it's going to be a pretty wild ride.
You said minus 40, and the good thing about that figure is it doesn't matter if you're talking about Fahrenheit or Celsius. I believe that's the same in both scales.
I think that is exactly right. Yeah, I think it's around about negative 42 that they both overlap, which is downright frigid.
It's wicked cold. Yeah, yeah. What kind of food will you guys have?
Well, I had my first camping meal in a very long time when we were up at the top of Whiteface. And I was absolutely shocked with how delicious it was. I had a gourmet macaroni and cheese. The ingredient list was outstanding. I mean, it had a ton of great cheeses to it. It wasn't just like a bunch of chemicals and weird flavor additives. The thing was absolutely delicious. So, you know, those pack light, you can chuck a whole ton of them in your bag, and then you're just merely adding hot water to them. So that's wonderful. And a whole lot of Untapped, so a lot of maple-fueled adventure, which is only fitting in this part of the world.
I guess so.
Yeah.
And so how are you feeling about what you're getting into? It's about, when as we're talking now, it's about 2 weeks away. How are you feeling?
I'm excited. I mean, you know, I'd lie if I didn't say I was a bit anxious. I don't do a lot of camping, but, you know, the bike practice week, long weekend up in the Adirondacks was awesome. I mean, it made me really excited to be working with this crew. And yeah, I mean, I can ride my bike all day, every day. Put me on a fat bike, a mountain bike, cross bike, road bike. I can do that. That I recognize is definitely going to be the easy part. So we have a mixed bag of fitness levels, and we have a mixed bag of outdoor far north camping levels, and I'm certainly on the spectrum of both. So we've got our strengths. It's sort of no different than a cycling team, and those who know what they're doing are going to be leading the way at particular times.
How do you feel about the, you know, the possibility of wildlife on your trip?
Yeah, that's definitely on my mind. There are not polar bears where I'm from. I think polar bears are cool, but as I've explained to Buck, I really prefer not to see them. Mm-hmm. So that is something I've stressed extensively to Buck, and I think he is aware of where I stand on things, and he has tried to do a very good job of explaining that up until this time, the bay has not actually been frozen, so the bears are sort of wandering around looking for food, whereas now that we're finally getting some proper Arctic temperatures, they're heading out on the ice. They want to eat fish and porpoises and other things much more than they want to investigate trash dumps, which is where they've been sighted in the past month. Yeah, I defer to Buck on that one.
Ted King, thanks for your time, and good luck with the James Bay descent.
Thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Buck Miller, we just spoke with Ted King, and I did bring up the topic of nuisance polar bears. I believe you said there were maybe two that have been spotted around Moosonee Moose Factory. What's the strategy for polar bears?
Yeah, so there were two seen in Moosonee Moose Factory, which is a halfway point, which is their most southern point of, that's the most southern range. There's two spotted in December. One of them was shot and killed, the other one they didn't find. So our strategy for polar bears is I'm basically trusting my experience living up there and having canoe tripped and traveled through polar bear country a little bit. You know, it's now February. The ice is all the way across James the Hudson Bay. Well, although we're going to be traveling on the ice, if it's possible, like if it's totally impossible, we might go down the road, the ice road. But so we'll be traveling down the ice with the super cold season we're having. The bears are, you know, definitely out hunting seals, nowhere near shore. And actually at shore, you're on mud flats for like a mile. So there won't even, seals can't even at high tide, seals can't come out close to the tree line at high tide on James Bay, unless you're at a river mouth. So the little breathing holes are going to be out, you know, in the center of the bay. So they shouldn't be around. They could be around. They'd be known to cross into the tree line every now and then through winter. And obviously we're going to, you know, carry smells with us and everything, like being stinky bike riders, and have a little bit of food with us. There's a chance they'll come through, but it's slim. But we are in their neighborhood, so we just got to remember that we'll have a gun with us.
See, I was going to ask that. It was my understanding that bear spray doesn't really work with polar bears. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I don't know anyone that has ever used it or tried it. You know, but no, you would never rely on bear spray for polar bears. You'd be crazy.
Right, right. What can you tell us more about the route that you guys will be traveling? It's about 600 kilometers. Tell me about the main stops.
Yeah, so the main stops are going to be Moosonee, which is a halfway point, Moosonee Moose Factory. We're starting in Attawapiskat First Nation, which is 15 kilometers from James Bay on the Attawapiskat River. We're going to drive up there, jump out, ride over to Gamiski Island, which is every island in James the Hudson Bay is a part of Nunavut. We'll be cruising around Agamiski, which Agamiski in the summer is littered with polar bears. There's all kinds of polar bears on Agamiski in the summer. Luckily, not winter. So we're going to cruise down Agamiski, and then if the bay is passable, we're going to take the bay all the way to Moosonee. We were going to duck into Cache in Albany, Kasachewan and Albany First Nations. They are halfway between, they're a quarter of the way down the trip, halfway between Attawapiskat and Moosonee. But we think we're just going to bypass and head straight to Moosonee down the ice. If the ice isn't good, like meaning our bikes that are going to be 70 pounds each with gear are breaking through the top crust, and we have to walk our bike everywhere. Well, we'll just take the ice road south, which is still going to be 600K. So then we get to Moose Knee. We're probably going to be stopping at a school to talk about the trip and show some kids some pretty cool gear. And then we head south from there on the Wheaton Winter Road, which connects Moose Factory to a forest access road, which is used for forestry. And there's two remote hydro dams, Abitibi Canyon and Otter Rapids. The Wheaton Road is 170 kilometers from Moose Factory to Otter Rapids, and then which just all muskeg, frozen ice road. And then it's forest access road for 50 kilometers to Abitibi Canyon, which is a really twisty, turny, fun kind of roller coaster gravel road. Abitibi Canyon is well known for snowmobiling. They have some really steep, big climbs with like nothing in the way. We're going to cross a creek called Eleanor Creek, which is named, I named my daughter after that creek. That's where we used to go get water when we were at my dad's trap camp. It was the local watering creek for us. That's on that road. And then once we get to Abitibi Canyon, forest access road, mostly flat all the way to Smooth Rock Falls, which is where I was born. And that'll be the end of the trip, hopefully around day 10.
Nice. And who's meeting you in Smooth Rock Falls?
Nobody. No one. There is zero. There is no media. We're going to be alone, freezing cold, stinky, and we're just probably going to want to eat something deep fried fast.
Right. And then you guys all have to get yourself south after that.
Yeah, we're just going to jump in Ryan's big red van and or someone's big van that we're going to be taking. And that's the end of the trip. We're going to head home.
Excellent. Excellent. And not long ago, you guys were testing gear in the Adirondacks. Can you tell me about anything maybe you discovered or that struck you on that testing trip, and that maybe you're going to change or use that knowledge when you get up to James Bay?
Packing. The big thing for us was packing. We wanted to see our bikes can carry, have about 40 liters in capacity with packs. So we need to make sure that we can fit everything. We're going to add maybe another 10 or 15 liters to that. 60 liters on our bikes. So we're going to add another 10 or 15 liters, maybe 20 to that. So we need to get, all of our gear each per person down to 60, 70 liters of space. So that's really tight. Like there's not a lot of room for any packing error. If you forget something, we get up there, you're toast. So we use the weekend to get as much of our gear, our mandatory gear that we have to have on our bikes, fitted with, we kitted them all out with the Blackburn, Outpost touring bags. And that was what I think, that was super, super important. If we didn't do that beforehand, we'd have been up there scratching our heads, probably lacking some gear.
And, these don't sound like the conditions where, a piece of gear going missing or forgotten is something, well, it could have serious effect. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we're going to see 40 below for sure. Like there's no two ways about it. We will see 40 below more than, like a daytime high would be around 20, 20 below. So that's your normal, like, well, not normal. That's like, if you get 18 minus 18, we'd be happy with that. So your regular traveling temperatures we're going to be in the high 20s and 30s all the time. You have to have all of your gear. You have to keep moving. You can't afford to stop longer than it takes to get your bottle out, drink what little you can drink, and eat food and get back on the bike. Like we got minutes before we will start locking up being too cold.
And then tell me about like setting up camp, because you're sleeping in the snow. It doesn't sound like you've got a lot of time either from when you call for the day.
No, setting up camp is tough. So at nighttime, I dread setting up camp at night. I don't mind tearing down camp in the morning, because what we do, the first thing we do in the morning is we pack our stuff inside. We leave the wood stove going as long as we can. That's the last thing we take out is the wood stove, so that as we're tearing down camp and packing our stuff, we can run the tent, heat our hands, and keep tearing stuff down. Then when the tent has to come down in the morning, we take the stove out, keep it going outside, and let our hands warm up while we're tearing the tent down. But at night, you can't set the tent up. You can't take the wood stove out, light it, and then set the tent up and bring a hot stove inside the tent and put the pipe through, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we basically set up the camp every night really, really cold. And yeah, it's just, it's a death march. You're just, you know, relying on everyone to do the job as quickly as possible so everybody can just warm up. And it's more, it's mostly your hands. Like, you know, your feet get cold, no big deal, but you need your hands, like you need dexterity to do all kinds of little things, right? So yeah, it's your hands setting up at night that really, you know, you pay for it. It sucks. No one looks forward to it.
And who has to carry the stove?
We haven't decided yet, but you'd be, the stove is, it's not that big of a deal. It's titanium sheet metal. It's tiny, super light. It weighs, you know, my 12 gauge shotgun is going to weigh a lot more than the stove. So I'm carrying the shotgun. So I better not be carrying the tent and stove.
That sounds fair. That sounds fair. Yeah. And then, tell me about sweat. Is that a concern, whether it happens throughout the day and then when you stop at night, is that something that can affect you, or does anyone sweat when it's that cold?
Yeah, no, sweat is a concern. Doing anything in the coldest of temperatures, you know, we're going to sweat, and we just have to keep it to a minimum. So you want to find that balance of staying warm enough, but not sweating like crazy. So you need to ride enough to stay warm so you're not freezing to death. But you can't ride too hard, because if you do get covered in sweat, it's just going to take that much longer to dry, and it's going to be a terrible time when you're trying to dry out. Setting up camp is an hour, so we're at least an hour before we get a hot wood fire going in the wood stove. So sometimes in when we do get really, really wet, what we've done in the past is build a fire just in the bush on the ground so we can warm up while we're setting up the tent. But you got to avoid sweat for sure.
Interesting. Was this trip your idea?
Yeah. Yeah. This was my, so when I lived in Moosonee, in Moose Factory, after I quit bike racing, 2009, 10 to 2015, I moved straight up there. And I would commute. I would ride my bike all over town. It's not a big town, but it's still very, very cold. And I'd ride all year round. I put studded tires on my mountain bike, just a regular rigid Kona with thumb shifters, old school, like 1994 Kona. And I would ride all over town, and I loved it. And I thought, man, this would be a cool trip to do. But when you're living up there, you know, you're not cycling fit, so to say. So I just kind of waited. Now we live in Huntsville, and I'm back hanging around my friends that ride bikes and you know, love adventures. So I thought, what the hell, let's go do this ride. And you know, it's totally possible, and we'll do it for a good cause.
Tell me about that cause. It's the Timmins Native Friendship Center that you guys are raising money for when throughout this trip?
Yeah, so the Timmins Native Friendship Center, we chose to do it for a for charity. They're a nonprofit that kind of they do all kinds of things. They operate, like, they do some employment. They help locals with employment. They offer free internet to everybody. They sometimes operate as a soup kitchen. They also have, like, parenting classes for at-risk mothers. They've even put on canoe races for Aboriginal Day in the past. You know, community events. They do all kinds of great things up there.
Well, it does sound like a worthy charity, and it also sounds like quite the adventure. We're going to be following it along on your guys' social feeds. But, and yeah, let's catch up afterwards to hear about how it went.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right, take care, Buck. Buck Miller is the organizer of the James Bay Descent, a 600-kilometer fat bike trip that will mark the first ride between Ontario and Nunavut. Ted King is a former pro cyclist and rider taking part in the long, cold trek that starts February 4th.
Ready and go.
It's time for Full Send, No Send. We have 5 minutes on the clock. What is our first topic, Dan?
Dear listeners, here's our first topic. Lucinda Brand is the most Canadian athlete we should be cheering for at the Cyclocross World Championships.
Okay, that's absurd. But let me explain to our international listeners where this might come from. Canadians have this instinct to Canadianify anybody who has even looked at Canada on a map. Here's an example. Pierre Gachon, who was born in Paris in 1909, is considered by many the first Canadian to race in the Tour de France in 1937.
He's Canadian. Did he visit Montreal?
He lived in Montreal. He raced a lot in
Canada.
We'll
take it.
Exactly. So, but I think Lucinda Brand is a...
I cannot confirm...
How can you Canadianify Lucinda Brand?
I cannot confirm the last time she looked at an atlas and then at Canada. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Okay. Dutch are pretty much the Canadians of Europe. Everybody likes them. Everybody likes Canadians.
Oh, man. You are...
Plus, she rides for Team Sunweb, which is sponsored by Cervelo, a Canadian brand.
Okay, so...
So there's that. Plus, plus, technically, one of the Dutch princesses...
Which one?
Princess Marguerite.
Yes.
Was born in a room... That was in Ottawa.
Yeah, but then it was declared part of the Netherlands.
Ooh, so interesting about that. It was actually declared international territory.
Oh, we're going to run these 5 minutes down.
Exactly. So the Dutch count her as their princess, can count her as their princess because she wasn't born in Canada. Because, so it was international territory.
Okay, great minutia that still does not make Lucinda Brand Canadian. Also, Carlos Sastre won... The Tour on a Cervelo R3. Is he the first Canadian to win the Tour de France?
Show me the Colombian princess born in Canada.
That is not enough to make Lucinda Brand your favorite Canadian.
Wouldn't it be nice to just ridiculous. Cheer for somebody who's like always gunning for the podium, though?
Okay, that's harsh, dude. That's really harsh.
That's harsh, but...
I'm send on this. I am rooting for Magalie Rochette, who finished fifth. At the Cyclocross Worlds in 2017, highest placed Canadian ever.
Maybe Lucinda Brand could be the next highest?
She's not Canadian.
But she could be.
No send.
Fine. Moving on to the men's race. MVDP. Will he be the MVP of the World Championships?
Instead of not doing it for the fourth year in a row?
Instead of the capitulation of the last 2 years.
I mean... He's won almost everything, except for what, 2 races?
Yeah, where he wasn't. Oh, 3, when he didn't show up.
Okay, anyway, I think it's hard to bet against him. Full send on him winning. I hope I don't regret this.
Yeah, I mean, but it's been full send every other time. He's always looked good, so I'm going to go no send.
Good luck.
I think he messes up again. I don't think it's Wout, though.
Oh.
I think it's Toon.
Wow, because... Well, okay. All right.
Moving on.
How are we doing for time?
We got 1 minute and 50 seconds.
Oh, right, hurry up.
Zwift Kiss Super League. Thoughts, no send, full send.
It is the guitar hero of cycling. It has skills that mimic real bike racing. Actually, I'd say it's more like cycling than Guitar Hero is to playing guitar. But... full send in what? Is it a good thing for people to do? Is it a good thing for people to watch?
This is a tough one. Are you into it? Are you not into it? Full send, no send? Will you watch it?
I started watching it, but then had to do real work, so I didn't. It wasn't enough to distract me from work like the Giro d'Italia might or the Tour de France.
You know what? This is a no send for me as well.
No send? Oh.
I hide it up, tried to watch. I guess it's okay. Again, though, not enough. No send.
All right.
E-bikes in Fondos, the RBC Whistler Grand Fondo recently announced they'll be allowing e-bikes in their 55-kilometer event.
Full send.
I'm a full send on this one, too.
Oh, we agree. Oh.
Okay, but here's my thing.
What?
This isn't a race.
Right.
People aren't, you know, this is more about completion.
Yeah.
I don't think you should get all up in a gruff if somebody passes you on an e-bike.
No, don't worry about it, man.
But you're I think the efforts ride. People are putting in are equivalent. So you're still sharing the suffering. You're still having the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's just maybe somebody who couldn't have been out there before, they're going to get out there with you.
To modify the Greg LeMond quote, you don't necessarily go faster. You'd still
No,
hurt.
It doesn't get easier. It just goes faster.
But it is easier and you go faster, but it still hurts. Oh, with apologies to Greg LeMond, and we're out.
Greg's still alive, but if he wasn't, he'd be rolling in his grave over that.
That is garble. And that's time. We actually got it done in the 5 minutes.
Can we figure out how the remote stops?
No, you got to figure out how to turn your...
I just had my old man moment.
Yeah, how does this phone work?
Where's my VCR?
Full send, no send. All right. How's your training going? Mine's okay. I'm still happy with the frequency of my trainer rides and the bit of cross-country skiing I'm doing on weekends. But I've been wondering about my endurance. Traditionally, This time of year is the point in our training when we should be building our base. But our hour-long trainer rides, and they are only an hour long because that's all I can really take on a trainer, but are these rides and the cross-country skiing enough? What should I be doing with the time I have available? As an amateur rider with a job and a family, I brought my questions to Coach Peter Glassford. Peter Glassford, how's it going?
Very well, very well. Yeah, excited to be back on the show, and we're into the new year here. So yeah, so I'm actually relatively fit, I think, myself right now, and excited for that. And clients seem to be moving along sort of wherever they are. I was just talking to one client in Manitoba, and it sounds very cold there. So.
That's a common theme across the country right now. But what I want to talk about is fitness-wise, a lot of us, it's January and February probably when this pod comes out, and traditionally this is a time to work on base, but we're in Canada and we have certain restrictions like snow, ice, cold. And what are ways of working on endurance and with, you know, with my trainer, with my, say, time-restricted lifestyle, work, family, all that stuff? And yeah, how can I make endurance gains at this time of year with those factors at play?
Really what we're trying to do now is just be generally fit, and that fitness hopefully is increasing. And that might be your CP20 or your threshold or whatever you care about, right? You're going to pick aspects of your fitness. It might be strength training that are going to increase during the general preparation period. It could be skiing. That would be great if you got outside too. So general preparation is about becoming generally fit and healthy, is another piece we often miss. And that's really, to me, what this January, February, March is really about, is sort of setting the base, if you will, or becoming generally prepared, so that then you can tell me, okay, in April, May, June, I want to be ready for X event in July. And so that's really what this winter in Canada, or winter as any working, you know, working person, working adult, is just preparing and becoming generally fit.
So instead of worrying about like that, you know, because I am looking at the pros and what they do, it's sort of hard not to, instead of saying, oh, I'm not doing these mad base miles like these guys, I just should scrap that from the list, because like you said, I'm not earning a living like that, but instead prepare myself in a general way for the season. So what are some general prep tips, or what are some of the areas I should focus on?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, just to reiterate, you can't possibly do the Tour de France, right? It's not an option, right? Like day one, 6 hours, like it's just not an option, right? Like there aren't the hours, there isn't the energy, right? And you know, you'll see people try to do 3 hours. They start at 7 p.m. and they finish at 10 p.m. And kudos to them. But, you know, again, there's sort of that health piece and the keeping marital relations together and work, you know, being energized for work and stuff, right? And sleep's yep. important. So just to reiterate, like those options aren't options for most of us, right? So
right.
So the options then are, A, I would start, okay, I'm starting in January, you know, there was Christmas holidays, you know, I was busy, you know, getting ready for that and work year end. So then you might actually be able to use some of those base principles of increasing volume. So maybe you start with like a couple 30-minute rides and you gradually increase those up to, you know, just easy. And I'm talking sort of 70, under 75% max heart rate, or, you know, endurance zone, zone 1-2. And you're going to just increase your volume until, you know, that training stimulus is not making you faster. And again, that might be a threshold test. That might be the wattage you're putting out at that set heart rate. You know, there's lots of ways to gauge that, but you're going to increase your volume until which point you can't, and you're not adapting to it, right? Because why would you work harder, in my mind? And that could be skiing. That could be some strength training, some core, some running if you're able to run safely, or it could all be on the trainer. So to me, that would be like a January, early February, maybe even later, depending on when your goals are in the season. And that used to be, you know, we might call that base one or general preparation period one, where it's pretty general. in terms of thinking about your actual goal. So if your goal is cyclocross, you know, obviously riding really easy is not overly specific, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would start with, is just if you can increase your volume, I would increase your volume by increasing your volume or increasing the number of rides or both.
Okay. And then what happens when I run up against, say, the hours of the week that I can train? Like, there's sort of no more volume in terms of hours. Yeah. Then do I start upping up the difficulty a bit?
Yeah. So I usually do a little extra push there to see if there is any frequency, because I really like frequency because it doesn't get talked about, or you could call it density, I guess, too. So I would push you a little bit to see if there was, like, could we do two rides on a Saturday, you know, or if you were going, again, I saw you skiing, so maybe on the morning you could do like a quick ride out of bed or something and then have breakfast and then go to the ski thing. Push if we could get a couple extra workouts in there. Strength might help there. But we will hit that volume limit. So then that may actually turn, again, to be sort of your base two or three, where you can start incorporating what I would call muscular endurance, but is sort of your tempo, sweet spot, even threshold. And so those are just those sort of like more moderate intensity zones. I think there's lots of value to doing that. The key being that, like, anyone who Mr. Sweet Spot, Frank Overton, who came up with it, like, a big part of his philosophy still involves endurance training. And if you go across any of the models, it there still is endurance training. So it's not sweet spot or go as hard as you can every time you ride. But I would start inserting one or two muscular endurance. So again, tempo so this would be zone three into low zone four. Workouts into your week. So one or two of those where you sort of do your 3x10s, 3x15s, 2x20s, that sort of thing. And that's going to increase the load on the week then. So you have your 8 hours, but now you've increased some intensity. So that's increasing the load of the week.
All right. Well, these are some great tips, Peter, which I know I'm going to use, or at least try to use, and keep that frequency or density going in these early months of the year. And we will have some more questions for you in a later podcast. Thanks for your time, Peter.
Love it. Yeah, if anyone has any follow-ups, there's definitely lots of ways to do it. So if anyone has special circumstance or whatever, definitely shoot in those questions.
Right on. Take care. Peter Glassford is a professional coach and head of Smart Athlete Coaching Services. You can listen to more training advice on The Consummate Athlete, a podcast by Peter and his wife, Molly Herford. Send your Ask a Coach questions for Peter to podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. In early January, contributor Molly Herford was at the Rally UHC cycling team camp in Southern California. Rally UHC is a well-established US-based project that became a UCI continental-level team in 2018. For years, the squad has had many Canadians in its ranks, from riders to directors to management. In fact, in 2015, I wrote a cheeky story about how the team had been successfully infiltrated by Canucks. Molly spoke with two Canadians, Sarah Bergen from Vancouver and Sarah Poitevin from Calgary. Last year, Bergen won the points jersey at the Joe Martin stage race. This year, she's already been racing in Australia, including in the Tour Down Under. In 2018, Poitevin won the best young rider jersey in three stage races. Those are the Tour Cycliste Féminine Internationale d'Ardèche, the Tour of California, and the Tour of the Gila. The two spoke about how they got into the sport and their season ahead. They also have tips for new cyclists.
My name is Sarah Poitevin, and I'm from Calgary, Alberta.
Awesome. And how exciting is it to be in California instead of Calgary right now?
Oh, it's super nice, yeah, to be riding on the road and with my teammates.
And with any amount of sunshine and not 5 feet of snow.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the warm weather is always a nice break from the winters.
Yes, I have friends that are stuck in the Calgary airport right now, actually.
Oh, no.
How long have you been riding for?
This is my fourth year on rally, and I started road racing just a few years before that.
Okay. So how old were you when you started riding?
I grew up mountain biking. I grew up in Kenmore, Alberta, and then switched over to the road when I was 16.
Okay. That's a really hard switch to make when you live in one of the nicest mountain biking spots in Canada.
Yeah.
So what made you shift to the road?
I spent a couple of years doing both road and mountain bike racing, and then just found I like the road a bit more, so I pursued that.
Mm-hmm. And how did you end up on rally?
I spent a couple of years racing for a local club in Calgary, and then decided that it was something that I wanted to try to pursue professionally. So then I reached out to a few different teams, and yeah, rally was interested, and so it worked out. It was good timing because at that point they were taking on a lot of development riders, so there are a few of us who got on the team then as super young riders and have developed with the team over the past few years.
Yeah.
Sarah Bergen, how did you start riding bikes?
I used to commute on my hardtail mountain bike during university to school. And as any good commuter in Vancouver knows, like, you don't like soft pedal your commute. Like, we kind of tongue in cheek, like, call it the commuter Olympics. So, like, yeah, I hit that commute like really hard on that hardtail mountain bike. And that kind of is what first sparked my interest in like the road, to be honest. Cause I'm like I like going fast and I like kind of like going after it. And yeah, so after school was done, I had a little bit of scholarship and grant money left over, and I literally funneled it into my first road bike.
How did you get into cycling in general? Because, I mean, it's not a sport that a lot of girls find at a young age.
Yeah, no. Growing up in Kenmore, it was easy to find the mountain biking, and my family did quite a bit, so we would go out together. It was definitely, like, there was really only maybe one or two other girls my age who were doing it. I didn't take it like super seriously until I was a little bit older when I started to do bigger races. And it was more of something I did on the side for fun mm-hmm. growing up. But definitely. Well, there's more and more girls getting into it at home, which is awesome to see. But I was definitely, more of a male-dominated sport when I was growing up.
So wait, where does racing come in then?
Yeah, so there's a local kind of fondo. It's like the Vancouver Whistler Fondo. And that was my first kind of like entry into racing. Like, I've always, like, as I've said, done competitive sports. And I'm a pretty competitive person. So I didn't really know, like, you know, like how to start racing. I literally had no clue how to start racing. So this fondo was kind of like my first step in that. And for anyone who knows, fondos aren't at all races. They're like a fun ride together as a group. But once again, and you take on these things, you take them on full on. So yeah, so I rode the fondo, and in my mind, I raced the fondo, and it was great. And then I actually got connected with a really great group of local riders. And I was like, hey, dudes, like, I want to race. I don't know where to start. And they're like, okay, we will show you the ways. And this is how you do it.
Yeah. And actually, if you could, like, talk to any of those, like, young girls now, what kind of advice would you give them for getting into it and, you know, making a career of it?
That it's actually possible to make cycling a career. And if that's something they choose to do. And, cycling, like, whether it's mountain or road, it's a great community of people, and so it's a really awesome sport to be involved in.
Mm-hmm. So how many years have you been racing pro?
Yes, this will now be my third year with Rally Cycling, and before that I raced with Red Truck Racing, which is a local Vancouver team, but it's more like of like a stepping stone up into the pro leagues.
Yeah, and so what are your goals for this coming year?
Oh, just have super, super amounts of fun. But actually.
But really.
Yeah, no. To have fun and to go really, really bloody fast. Yeah, so the season's long and it's looking like it's going to be really full. So definitely targeting some of that later season European stuff mm-hmm. is some of the priorities. But honestly, like, I can't, like, underline the importance of just, like, having a good time and enjoying what you do. Because, like, we put in, like, a ton of time on the bike and... As a team, like, we we have like a lot of the same returning riders, so we have a great chemistry, and just keep that going and like support your teammate, be a good teammate, have fun. The rest mm-hmm. is going to follow. So
yeah. And I mean, with that kind of hectic schedule, what's your strategy for staying, I mean, healthy during it, we'll say healthy and recovered?
Yeah. It's kind of, it's been like an evolution in a way, just cause like I'm relatively new to the sport, and like you're eager and you may like bite off like too much, like more than you can chew pretty much. So my strategy over the past couple of years has been really trying to listen to your body, which sounds really basic and simple, but it's a lot harder than it seems because, you know, we kind of train ourselves to push through and to persevere, but to actually to listen to what your body's telling you and like, yeah, you need to like take a couple chill days and really prioritizing that. And also don't burn in at both ends. So like when I first started riding, I was working full time, like I had a professional job and then training full time. And it's like the epitome of burning at both ends. You mm-hmm. get home from racing, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do a 40-hour week, no problem. And I'm like, yeah, it's not really sustainable for, like, you know, just overall health and wellness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what are your goals for this coming season?
Yeah, lots of different goals. So this season is really exciting for the team because we're transitioning more to have more European races in our schedule. So we'll do a lot of the same North American races in the early season, which will be good. So, yeah, and then we'll have the opportunity to try out some new and bigger races over in Europe in the second half of the season. So, yeah, really exciting for the team.
That's super exciting. Have you raced in Europe before?
Yeah, we've done a few races together. So, we're excited to do more. And having a lot of the same teammates with we only have a couple of new additions, and no, they're fitting really well in with the team. So, yeah, no, I think we have really good cohesion, and that will make a big difference as we start to do new races.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you tell when you're getting tired and need to take a break versus that time you need to push through? Have you figured out where that is? Because I'm always like, am I lazy or do I really need a rest day?
Yeah, it's so bloody tricky, and it might be like a bit of trial and error, but for me, I'm trying to think if there's like, because I've thought like long and hard about this, and I think for me it's when I literally don't want to do it, because like 99% of the time I really want to do it, but then mm-hmm. as soon as like that motivation starts to like slip a bit, just knowing like how I'm as a person, I'm like, that's usually like a pretty big signal that I should chill out for a bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
so I don't lack that like motivation for sure.
Yeah. All right. And last question for Canadian cycling. What is your best tip for a new cyclist, or like the hardest thing you had to learn?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. Can I do two? I'm going to do two.
Yes, do two.
First tip, maybe three. So first tip, I'd say get a bike fit, just because you mm-hmm. touch the bike in three spots. Like you're going to make those spots count. And like that way, like invest and be kind to your body. Like you're going to sit on that saddle for a long time. Like get some good shoes, some good kit, and really get comfortable on your bike, because if you're struggling like from, you know, the get-go and you're going to start riding, it's just going to frustrate you. So that's tip one. Tip two is take a lot of tasty snacks with you, because motivation, and it's never fun bonking or getting super cranky on a ride. And I don't know, I'm doing three tips because, well, this isn't really a tip, but just like ride with people and have fun, and because the community, like all throughout Canada, like I've been lucky enough to travel throughout the country, check out a lot of roads, but there's tons of cool people out there who are stoked on bikes, so like, yeah, mm-hmm. ride with them.
I love that. You pretty much hit the three topics that I've written books about, so I'm like super excited about that.
Perfect.
Well done. Awesome.
Molly Herford is a Canadian Cycling Magazine contributor. She also co-hosts the Consummate Athlete podcast with her husband, Peter Glassford. Sarah Bergen and Sarah Poitevin are members of Rally UHC Cycling.
And that's the episode. It was put together by Dan Walker, Philippe Tremblay, me, Matthew Piero, and was produced by Adam Killick.
Now, if you want more of what we're doing at Canadian Cycling Magazine, follow us on Instagram at Canadian Cycling, on Twitter at Canadian Cycling as well. On Facebook, it's at Cycling Mag. And Remember to download, rate, subscribe, but only if it's 5 stars and only if it's something nice. Do you know where they can listen to us, Matthew?
They can listen to us everywhere where you get podcasts.
Apple Podcasts, yeah. Stitcher, yeah. Google Play, yeah. Spotify, TuneIn,
yeah.
And SoundCloud.
Yeah, and a good old RSS feed will hook you up, yo.
And this time, when you're recommending your podcast, who do they recommend, Matthew?
You should recommend this podcast. Okay, you're at the hardware store. You're buying a ton of wood screws to make your own studded tires. And when the guy or gal at the hardware store says, "Hey, bud, what's with all the wood screws?" And you tell this person that you're making your own studded tires. You can also say, "Hey, you know what? You should also listen to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast."
Boom. That's another 10 listeners right there.
More than 10. If you have topic ideas for Full Send, No Send, send us an email at podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca. And if you have questions for Coach Peter Glassford, also send those to the same address, podcast@cyclingmagazine.ca.
And one more thing, just want to thank our dear listeners for making the last episode the most listened to episode in the history of the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast.
Yes, keep those downloads coming. Thank you, everyone. And also thank you to the Ontario Media Development Corporation for its support. We'll see you next time.